This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 19th, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 343. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And on the big deal feature, should athletes born male be allowed to play sports against women? It's a question that Premier David Eby's NDP government refused to debate during the British Columbia Legislature's spring session, which ended May 16th. The NDP called it transphobic, but the Conservative Party called it necessary to keep sports safe and fair. My guests this week are Hannah Dreger, an aide to Conservative leader John Rustad, and Linda Blade, former Athletics Alberta president, coach, and author. Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre came to East Vancouver on May 16th to announce another plank in his platform. He proposes a summertime gas tax holiday for drivers. Specifically, Poilievre says the Trudeau Liberals should suspend the carbon tax, excise tax, and GST on gas and diesel between Victoria Day and Labor Day. Poilievre estimated average Canadian families would save $870. How could the government pay for it? He suggested the Trudeau Liberals could cut back on the billions of dollars they spend every year on consultants. $21 billion a year for what the government calls professional and special services. Poilievre spoke to reporters between the Esso gas pumps and 7-Eleven convenience store at Grandview and Rupert. Only four of us were allowed to ask a single question each, so I packed two into one.
Next question.
Bob Mackin, TheBreaker.News. You have made it your feelings clear about lobbyists and how you would approach lobbyists if you become prime minister. Will you back that up with laws, with amendments to laws to stop the conflicts of interest that are happening, the unethical lobbying that happens, the people that are basically selling access to the politicians? Will you back that up with laws? And also wanted to find out what your feelings are about the federal spending so far on the FIFA World Cup, about $220 million spread between Vancouver and Toronto, which is just a drop in the bucket. There's going to be a lot more because the government has not announced what they're spending on security.
So on your first point, yes, we already did. It was the Conservative, the government of Stephen Harper that brought in the Accountability Act, which forced lobbyists to register their interactions with politicians. So every time a lobbyist interacts with a politician or top bureaucrat, they have to register it. As a result of a law that I helped usher through the House of Commons in 2006 as the Parliamentary Secretary to the Treasury Board President. And I do think we need even stronger and clearer laws to stop the excess influence of corporate lobbyists and other insiders. Justin Trudeau has found a number of loopholes in the Accountability Act. We need to close those loopholes to reduce the influence of lobbyists, of insiders, and give Canadians back control of their government. As for spending on these sporting events, we need to protect taxpayers. Every time the Trudeau government spends on anything, they go over budget, massively over budget. And then nobody's held accountable, the taxpayers pick up the tab. So I'm very hesitant to spend taxpayers' money on anything other than the core services of roads, bridges, police, military, border security, and a safety net for those who can't provide for themselves. That's common sense. Let's bring it home.
This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Should athletes who were born male be allowed to compete in women's sports against females? What is more important in sport, inclusivity or safety and a level playing field? In 2023, World Athletics, the track and field governing body, banned male-to-female transgender athletes who have been through male puberty. On April 30th in the British Columbia Legislature, John Rustad, the leader of the Conservative Party of BC, tabled the private member's bill called the Fairness in Women's and Girls' Sports Bill. The bill proposed requiring publicly funded sports, teams, events, and tournaments to be classified by sex and limit participants of the biological sex that corresponds to the sex classification. Private members' bills almost never get passed in BC's whipped legislature. In this case, the NDP government under Premier David Eby took it one step further. The NDP used its majority to block the bill from the order paper so that it could not be debated in the legislature this session. Kelly Patton, the Parliamentary Secretary for Gender Equity, took to social media and called it a, quote, horrific bill targeting trans women and girls. It's the latest in a pattern of Rustad's party targeting queer kids, end quote. Rustad said in the legislature that the bill was written by women and girls for women and girls. The legislature's spring session ended May 16th and won't reconvene until sometime after the October 19th provincial election. Now, joining me on this podcast are Hannah Dreger, the Research and Communications Officer for John Rustad, leader of the Conservative Caucus in the BC Legislature, and Linda Blade, the former president of Athletics Alberta, former heptathlete, a high-performance coach, and holder of a PhD in kinesiology from Simon Fraser University. And Linda Blade is also the co-author with Barbara Kay of Unsporting, How Trans Activism and Science Denial Are Destroying Sport. Now, Hannah, you helped draft this bill. What was in it?
Thanks, Bob, not only for inviting us on to have this important conversation, but for, right off the bat, the great question. So the bill in and of itself essentially lines or outlines the following. In the province of British Columbia, there is clearly a need for somebody to step in and say, female categories need to be established and they need to be separate from a male category. Along with that, there is a clear need for to be put in writing the establishment and the need for a co-ed category. For those who, for every athlete between women and girls like myself who, you know, who often do like to train with stronger individuals like males and do find great training partners in males and really enjoy the thrill and the opportunity and the experience of competing with males, but not at the expense of the female category. So the bill in and of itself is quite simple. It puts those very definitions and that context into writing. And beyond that, it does also give any athlete or organization, if, for example, they were to ask for an investigation or for the record to be looked at, if a male participated in and participated in a female category and earned a quote unquote earned a title or record in the female category, that they would have the right to ask for that to be struck from the record. And by doing so, the bill would establish legal protection for them to be able to do that and to ask for that process without being demonized for doing so. So that was very important for us to have that anti-retaliatory clause in the bill. Because unfortunately, what we've seen in other jurisdictions across North America, when brave women and girls, you know, step up and try and point out this travesty that is going on in female sports categories. So that was very important for us to have in the bill as well.
Anna, which sports do you train and compete in?
From a young age, I have played everything from soccer to volleyball. And now in my adult years, my favorite sports choice are judo. I love to box, and same with wrestling and Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Those are my passions currently.
An important moment in sports where women's sports have become big business with WNBA and with professional soccer. We're seeing the Olympics coming up in Paris, where the International Olympic Committee was quite proud that this will be a gender equal Olympics, that there will be as many female athletes as male athletes. While that is happening, this debate.
Certainly. And another thing that I do think it's important to stress here is that, you know, I run into a lot of people, athletes, you know, individuals, everybody in between, who maybe doesn't recall that there is precedent here in our province as well as, again, as both you and I mentioned, across jurisdictions in North America. So I would remind everybody of the individual named Michelle Dumaresque, who is a biological male and professional downhill mountain bike competitor from British Columbia, who in May of 2001 entered the Bear Mountain race in in Mission here in BC, entered the novice female class and won. And in fact, Dumoresque's time was 2.5 seconds faster than the winner of the female professional category, who of course was a female. And despite public outcry from both the athletes and Dumoresque's fellow female competitors and the public itself, this person was permitted and in fact, I would say emboldened to continue on for years in that sports category. You know, taking opportunities away from women and smashing records for the very obvious reason that this person is a biological male. And as you've just mentioned, I mean, that is a biological fact. We have millions of years of precedent to back that up if people perhaps don't want to take our word for it. But I'm afraid as well what we've seen here, and as I've studied and I've learned from esteemed individuals like Professor Richard Dawkins, is that what we have seen play out, certainly here in British Columbia, but across the West, is a conflation of the terms sex and gender. Now, gender is the behavioral expression of biological sex, of which there are two. And in recent years, and in certainly the past decade or so, what we have seen happen is there has been a conflation of the two words, and it's become a genteel euphemism. And unfortunately, what we've also seen play out is this word and the context and everything that it brings with it has been allowed to undermine, and now, especially in recent cases, undermine the word sex itself and the concept and the reality that comes with that. And what we have seen is that it comes at great harm and great cost to women and girls. So we felt, and I'm proud to work for John Rustad, a man who has integrity, and felt it was important to step in and say, allowing this to happen, allowing biological males to self-identify their way into female sports categories is not valor, it's vandalism. And it's time for someone to step in and say just that. And that is what we did with the scope and spirit of this legislation. And I'm proud of not just that, but that it will stand for itself and in the record for not just politicians to see, but the public themselves to see and to read. And I'm very proud of that.
And Linda Blade, you were there in the public gallery in the legislative chamber as John Rostad spoke and tabled the bill. And then you saw what happened with the extraordinary vote by the NDP caucus to prevent the bill from reaching the next stage. What was your feeling as this was unfolding? Was it a bit of a roller coaster?
Well, I can't say it was unexpected, but it was a huge betrayal of women and girls in BC and across Canada. The fact that a party, a majority party, would stand, physically stand and say, no, we don't care about fairness for women and girls in sport is really, it was astonishing. And basically disheartening, because you would think that they would want to let the bill go through for a closer inspection, second reading, all of that. Just something where they could review what is going on. What would entice somebody to table a bill such as this, even if they'd never heard of the problem, the growing problem of males in female competition? You would think they would want to at least give women and girls a chance with a bill like this. And I have to just hand it to Hannah and John Rustad and that whole group for having the guts to put this on the table, because it's high time in Canada.
The NDP tried to frame this bill as being transphobic and against human rights laws. What is your answer to the NDP and its allegation that this is transphobic?
It's pro-women. The word trans doesn't even show up in the document. Apparently, they're the ones conflating trans with pro-women, as if nobody's allowed to be pro-biological sex anymore. And the truth is, sex is in the charter. sex hasn't gone away when gender identity and gender expression were added to the human rights law. I didn't see biological sex disappear as a characteristic against which we cannot discriminate. So the fact that they would conflate it like that and then disparage those of us who are supporting women and girls and trying to make us look like somehow we're some sort of back in the cave days wanting to have, you know, respect on the basis of sex is crazy. And I think the public will see right through it, frankly. They can disparage us all they want, but what we're asking for is really logical. And there's, if you read the bill, it's very nicely written, simply put, it's pro-women, and it has nothing to do with any ideology. We compete with our bodies, not with our ideologies. And the last time I checked, we never picked athletes for any sport based on their religion, their ideology, their politics. The beauty of sport was that you could always put those things aside and compete with your bodies. And fundamentally, bodies are still male and female.
Hannah, Premier David Eby, the leader of the NDP, has accused the conservatives under John Rustad of trying to bring U.S.-style culture war politics into the legislature, and this is one of the cases that he points to. What is your reaction to that?
You know what, Bob? I'm actually really glad that you asked me that. Now, here's another thing I'm really proud to tell you. In my family, I am proud to not only be a part of a family of strong Canadians and Brits, but Americans. And I will tell you that it makes me so proud that not only my husband, but my father-in-law are Americans. And I've had about enough of politicians demonizing our family and our friends over in the United States. We are North Americans at the end of the day. We're in this together. And I will not sit by and allow somebody to demonize our fellow North Americans. And I would encourage him, and I hope that he hears me say this. They are our friends, they are our family, and they are people who live their lives with honor and dignity and who make sacrifices for people like us so we can enjoy the lives that we live in this beautiful province that we enjoy. And I would remind him of that. And now, what I will say about the premier accusing us of importing American-style politics into this province is I encourage and I will allow the public to play judge, jury, and executioner likely in this upcoming provincial election in the fall for themselves. We will let the public decide who it is who is importing divisive ideology into this province and creating a wedge not only here on our very doorstep and in our provincial legislature, but across the West. And I hope people hear that, and I hope they remember that come October 19th.
So we've seen other places in the world, the United States grappling with it, the Brits grappling with it, but here in British Columbia, this aversion to even talking about it in the legislature. Why do you think that is?
Well, I can't speak for why they would not want to talk about it unless they're just scared to death to face the truth. But can I just backtrack just a little and say I agree about the NC2A. I am a product of that system. I was so grateful that when I graduated from British Columbia as a high school athlete, I had a full scholarship down in the States, graduated from the University of Maryland. And you know what I did with that thing? That NCAA scholarship launched my entire career as a high performance coach. When I went overseas, I literally got a job with World Athletics, going into Muslim countries, teaching Muslim women how to coach girls. They needed a female to go into those countries to help the women develop their own girls in sport. And I was that person in the late 90s who did this in Iran, Tehran, and Bahrain, all the way across. And so it set me up. And now I came back to Alberta, became eventually president of Athletics Alberta, and which is the Track and Field Association. And then we were lobbying very hard because it became apparent in about 2018 that the national governing bodies of the sport in Canada were asking us to allow a male athlete to come into women's sport, can identify as a female one day, or just play in the men's section the next day without any mitigation, without any gatekeeping. And finally, I was so glad, so grateful that World Athletics last year made the ruling that it was unethical and prohibited for a male athlete to compete against female athletes at the elite level. But then when that happened, the national governing body then decided, well, we can't change the international section. So now we're just going to say this has to happen at the provincial level with the children on the ground. And at the time, I was still president of Athletics Alberta, and I said, not on my watch. In Athletics Alberta, we're going to say, if you're born male, you compete male. That's the most inclusive thing you can do, because the minute you allow a male athlete into female sport, then you're excluding women and girls. And by the way, I've had many letters since I've spoken out and wrote the book. I've had letters from BC parents of 9-year-olds and small children saying, can you help us somehow? Can you help me make sense of the fact that a little boy was allowed to play against my daughter? And, you know, it's happening at ground level. We're not allowed to talk about it. It's a problem. So the fact that the bill would be put on the table at a provincial legislature is so important, Bob, because it means that we can fix things at ground level. And then some things are being fixed at the international level, and eventually everything aligns between, because I think the national governing bodies are just so indoctrinated now with this ideology that we're not even allowed to change anything at the national level. So the power is on the ground, in the provinces, on the community playing fields. If we can fix that, I think it's pretty much resolved, actually, because, you know, top female athletes come from somewhere. Where do they come from? They come from communities and provincial sports experiences and eventually make it to the top. And if they're allowed to compete fairly at the provincial community levels, schools, they will thrive. And that's what we're seeking.
Perhaps I could maybe just tie up that thought, that beautiful thought here also by saying that not just as an athlete myself, but it is so important for the Conservatives to recognize and to, through this legislation, to say that, you know, sport isn't just an activity. It's not just a thing that you do. It's a place that you go physically. It's a place you go emotionally and mentally. It's an anchor. And everybody deserves the opportunity to participate in sport, but not at the expense of the female category. And I hope that people will see here that with this legislation, we can do this in a common sense way. We can do it together, and we can make sure that everybody has an opportunity for fair and equal sport and all of the opportunities and the benefits that come from that.
Now, Linda, you co-authored with Barbara Kay, Unsporting, How Trans Activism and Science Denial Are Destroying Sport. When was the turning point for you? When did you feel you had to make the stand, go public, and say there needed to be rules to protect the place for women and girls in sport?
The turning point for me was 2018, when I was on a national committee looking at this with track and field. And of course, I was representing the province of Alberta, being the president of the province in track and field. And so it was at the round table of all other provincial presidents. And this is when we were told, because of Bill C-16 and because they were interpreting it a certain way, I don't think it's what Bill C-16 necessarily demanded, but they were interpreting it to mean that anybody can be anything they want, and then you have to just accommodate that person. Whereas, you know, I was looking at it differently, that one way to accommodate a male who has a different identity is simply to have the other males not bully that person. But anyway, instead of getting into the weeds, let me just say, I was at the table and I was arguing the counterpoint, and everybody just sat there and looked at their hands. They knew I was right, because every record from international, world, Olympic, the national records, provincial records, school records, every single record in track and field shows that males have an, you know, incredible performance advantage, way, way bigger than if a woman was, let's say, doping. So I just said, you know, this is crazy. We can't allow this to happen in our sport. And so for them to look down at their hands and not make eye contact, and then they wouldn't talk to me at coffee time, I thought, ah, something's up here. Obviously, I'm the woman in the room, the leader in the room. If I don't say something, I have my PhD in kinesiology. I have all the characteristics necessary to make this argument. If I don't stand up and say something, we'll just go along and the whole thing will go into the dumpster. So I figured at that point, I'm going to stand up for the female athlete category, no matter what. And so then I started writing op-eds. And then, of course, I got the opportunity during COVID to work on a book. So with Barbara Kay, the journalist from Montreal, very highly esteemed journalist. And my point is, and it's funny, Bob, because one of the things we went back and forth on is the title of the book. Should we say it's Destroying Women's Sports or Destroying Sport? And that's the last couple of words, right? So basically, I insisted that we don't put in the word women's sport. It's just destroying sport, because what's happening at ground level, and most people don't really think this through, but if you tell an official, most of our officials that run our competitions are elderly, retired people. They want to give back to the sport. They want to give back to the children. They're volunteers. If it becomes impossible for them to actually be involved, or it's not worth it anymore because it's too hard. If you're allowing, if an official sees a little boy in a girl's race and says something, and then they're accused of hate or transphobia, if we don't have clear rules and guidelines, what happens is our officials tend to walk away as well. And families, and I had families saying, if this happens, Linda, we're going to take our girls out of sport. So basically, if we lose our volunteer base because it becomes too difficult to call a spade, we actually don't have competitions for anybody. And it really does a disservice to sport at the grassroots level, whether it's for boys, girls, or whoever. And I recognize right away that would be one of the outcomes is just that you undermine sport as a whole, because sport is based on clear ethical guidelines and rules. And if we start fudging those things, it'll go away.
The NDP, of course, didn't allow the bill or the issue to progress in the legislature, but legislature is almost closed, and the unofficial start to the election campaign really begins after it closes later this month. The election itself is October 19th. Now, the NDP can't tell which parties what they can say during the election campaign. So, Hannah, will this be in the Conservative platform? And Linda, will you come back to BC when the election happens, if it is in the Conservative platform, and be out here educating the public and campaigning for it with the Conservatives?
Thanks for the question, Bob. And you know what? I cannot say, simply because my capacity working with the Conservative caucus is caucus only. So I can't speak for policy itself, but what I can say is that I'm almost certain that it will be on the minds of voters come the fall election.
I will be ready. My goodness. If John Redstead and the Conservatives win and they put this through as a bill and it's in law, you better believe I'll do everything I can to come back and witness that moment, because it will be historic. I think Danielle Smith in Alberta is going to do something similar. She's indicated such a thing, but we'll see who wins, BC or Alberta, eh?
And on that note, too, I will say this is why it was very important to me. And we really did take the time to be thorough, both with our research that went into this bill, as well as the drafting process itself. So this bill, not if, but when Premier Redstead goes into the legislature beyond October 19th, this bill will be primed, prepped, and ready to go on the order paper to be called for debate, and I hope to be called into law.
And that's the beauty of sport and the beauty of politics. Anything can happen. So thanks again for joining us on the podcast, to Hannah Dreger, Research and Communications Officer for John Redstead, leader of the Conservative Caucus in the British Columbia Legislature, And Linda Blay, the former president of Athletics Alberta, former heptathlete. She's a high-performance coach with a PhD in kinesiology from Simon Fraser University and the co-author with Barbara Kay of Unsporting, How Trans Activism and Science Denial Are Destroying Sport.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Bob.
News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In the Taiwan news, Taiwan confirms support from six countries at World Health Assembly. Foreign minister expects at least 11 allies to submit motions. Taiwan still has not received an invitation to the May 27th to June 1st conference, as China has been blocking Taiwan since 2017. A delegation will still visit Geneva to hold bilateral discussions with participating countries. In Kyoto news, over 80,000 foreigners working at convenience stores in Japan. Foreign workers now represent around 10% of the part-time labor force across branches of 7-Eleven Japan Company, Lawson Inc., and Family Mart Co., according to the data. A significant portion of the workers come from China, Vietnam, and Nepal. Wednesday marked 50 years since the opening of Japan's first ever convenience store, a 7-Eleven outlet in Tokyo's Toyosu area, on May 15, 1974. In the Hong Kong Free Press, glory to Hong Kong. Google blocks 32 YouTube videos of protest song after court ruling. The Court of Appeal sided with the government, overturning last year's decision by a lower court rejecting the injunction that cited free speech concerns. The 32 videos listed in the court order have all been replaced with a message on YouTube stating, quote, "This content is not available on this country domain due to a court order," end quote. However, some versions remain accessible, as do versions on other platforms such as Spotify.
That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In Willamette Week, sad dogs, bags of drugs, train wreck win our campaign mailer awards. Candidates still rely on dead tree flyers to win your vote. We wish them luck. It's springtime in an election year in Oregon, and that means political mailers are flying like pollen in the spring water corridor. Mailers increased name recognition, according to a 2014 article in Political Research Quarterly, and they increase one's intent to vote. But they don't seem to change hearts and minds. See the good, the bad, and the ugly at the Willamette Week website. In Como news, two Democratic candidates named Bob Ferguson withdraw from Washington governor's race. Two additional Democratic candidates filed to run for Washington governor under the name Bob Ferguson. The Democratic frontrunner Bob Ferguson, who is also the attorney general, sent them cease and desist letters. Right-wing activist Glenn Morgan posted on Facebook around 5 p.m. May 10th, saying that he was the volunteer campaign manager for two of the Bob Fergusons running for governor, but by Monday evening, both Bob Fergusons told Como News that they were dropping out of the race. In the Times Colonist, dance duo from Nanaimo narrowly misses $1 million prize in Canada's Got Talent finale. Funkonometry placed second in the popular City TV series. The duo of Carlo Rush, 22, and Jackson Fryer, 21, bested six other finalists. Funkonometry was the clear favorite on the show's official social media pages, but did not amass enough votes to win top prize. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to family doctors in British Columbia. There aren't enough of them, but let's say thank you to those that we do have. May 19th is Family Doctor Day in BC. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. that's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 19th, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 19th of May in 1911, Parks Canada was established as the Dominion Parks branch, the first of its kind in the world? Parks Canada manages 3 marine conservation areas, 48 national parks, and 172 national historic sites. Go visit one, you'll be glad you did. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to Bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News on Twitter, also known as X, for news as it happens. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.